Hello, and welcome to the Inside Writing Podcast. I am your host, Josh Sippy. As a reminder, all of these episodes are recorded live Wednesdays, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern time. You can sign up on the Gotham Writers website for free. Now then, on to the show. Today, we're talking with Fred Kaler. Fred is an artist and storyteller whose real-life misadventures include sunken boats, shark encounters, and hurricanes. He's published numerous picture books, including What If, Then We, and the middle grade Garbage Island. He is also the founder of Ready Chapter One. Fred, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. Got my video started. Got my audio on. Can you hear me now?
We can, yes.
Let me pull up my phone. Can you hear me now?
That's right.
Take us back a few years there. Sorry about that.
It's all good. It had to happen. So, Fred, you've got quite a few books out there. You're the founder of Ready Chapter One, which further engages with the publishing industry. But I want to go back to that moment where you felt like you really broke into the writing world. Do you have a moment where you sort of were like, oh, I'm here now. This is what I want to do.
Yeah, I do actually. And it was, I didn't necessarily believe it when it happened, but I remember I was on Christmas break. It was Christmas Eve, as a matter of fact, and I was painting our house. So I was like up to my elbows, like on a ladder. I got paint splattered all over everything. I got the sprayer and I'm doing this and, you know, the phone rings and it was probably a BlackBerry. Let's be honest. It's probably a BlackBerry. I look in my pocket and it's a New York City number. And I'm like, I live in Florida. I don't know anyone in New York City. This could only be, you know, my dream come true. So I answered the phone. It literally was. It was an editor from Penguin Random House. Well, it was just Penguin at the time. And she had received a postcard that I sent out with some artwork on it. And she had loved the storytelling in that artwork. And she'd asked if I had a full book to go with it. And so literally I had sketched out, you know, this entire story in about 70 words. So I wrote a whole book in 70 words, sent it back to her. And that phone call was the one where she was like, yes, we would like to offer you a 2-book deal based on the 70 words that you sent us. And and like, I just remember sitting there on the ladder and with the paint sprayer in one hand, just thinking to myself, this changes everything. And so like, that was my moment.
And had you been doing much submitting up to that point? Like how much was this a surprise and how much was this like, it's about time?
Ooh, boy, that's a good question. I didn't know how long it was going to take. I had been pursuing the publishing industry for about 10 years. And I'd finally found the right conferences for me to go to. Like, I think everybody's going to have their own, you know, their own thing that works best for them. But I found that these groups of children's writers that I would go to their conferences like that it was a really good fit. People were friendly and I would have these one-on-one opportunities. And I love to tell this story because for any of the artists who are out there, like literally the best thing you can do for your career is find an opportunity to get feedback from a professional art director who acquires. And so, you know, this was probably my 30th critique at one of these conferences. And so, you know, every year I would spend my vacation time and my vacation money to attend. And you know, I just thought I was so certain that I was going to come home with more rejections. But this art director is flipping through my portfolio and she sees all of this work that kind of looks like a knockoff of Pixar 3D stuff at the time. So probably from, you know, 15 years ago, 10, 12 years ago, something like that. And I can just see it on her face. Her expression is falling as she's flipping through my portfolio. And she gets to the very last page and it was a random sketch that I had just thrown in on the very last page. And she kind of like stops, like pulls my attention, you know, eye to eye contact. She's like, Fred, what's this? And I was like, I don't know. It was a sketch. I thought it was good. Some people on Facebook liked it. And she was like, okay, no, this is your voice. This is you. Stop trying to pretend like you work for Disney. Like do what you're like. It's kind of weird, but it's sketchy and it's vibrant and it's you. Throw away everything else in your portfolio. Put this image on a postcard and you're going to get your first book deal. And then she closes my portfolio, hands it back to me and says, I think our critique is over. Go have a great career. And I literally did exactly what she said. I threw away everything else in my portfolio. I redrew all of it in that sketchy, loose style. And I took that exact image and I put it on a postcard and I sent it out to all my art directors on my list. And I had three different editors end up calling me offering to do a book deal just based on that one image that was in the back of my portfolio.
That's awesome. Yeah, I have to say your art style, it's so cool. It's so expressive. So I get what she was saying. And I want to ask, you know, because you're a writer and you're an artist, which one of those came first? It sounds like the art came first for you.
No, I always wanted to be a novelist first. So, it's interesting because it's like two different sides of the brain for me. Like I can draw with anything going on, like anywhere. So, you know, I could be in the middle of traffic. I can be on a subway. I could, you know, do plein air, like art out in the middle of the park. But when I write, like I have to be so focused and it's like a different place. I'm going to a different place than when I do art. And because my background is as an artist, so I've done art commercially for basically my whole career, not necessarily illustration, but graphic design, web development, you know, advertising, marketing kind of stuff. Because I spent so much time doing that, the illustration came really naturally, but it wasn't until I married the art with the images that my career finally like found its hook. And so that was super duper important for me was to have that revelation. It's basically like, Fred, you're not brilliant enough on your own as an artist, and you're not brilliant enough on your own as a writer. But the two things together, that makes this third dimension of Fred that is marketable and sellable.
So when did those two come together? Like, when did it dawn on you? Like, hey, if I combine these two and then... Like, what was the first thing you started to do there? Were you like writing picture books or how did that all start?
Yeah, no, great question. So, you know, I worked for I worked in the creative services department of a Fortune 100 supermarket chain that we have down here in Florida called Publix, Publix Supermarkets. They were awesome to me, great company to work for. But I would spend so much time like Photoshopping the chunky mashed potatoes to look like creamy mashed potatoes, or can you take the background out of this can of peas? Or, you know, like it's production work, right? So I spent so much time doing production graphic design work that when I sat down to use those same exact tools to try and draw something, it was like everything clicked. And so my hand, it was almost like the Miyagi wax on, wax off thing. You know, it's like you've done this so many times. Now, all of a sudden, when I ask you to do it for something that's really important and really matters to you, it's like, whoa, it just works.
And which one requires more work for you? Do you feel like it takes more? It sounds like it takes more concentration to do the writing, but is one harder than the other?
Oh, so both require what I call voice. And that's something you probably discuss a lot on your show. And I talk a lot about visual voice for artists. So it's determining what makes you weird as an artist and elevating that to its highest potential. So I feel like that's for both. So if, you know, the sum of your life experiences can feed into both your art and your writing. And the more you give yourself the gift of time to develop both of those things, the better each is going to get. So I don't think that actually answered your question. So sorry.
No, that was good though. I like this concept of elevating your weird. I think that's such a great way to look at it. So along those lines, I do want to ask you about voice because you've talked so much about it already. How long did it take you to discover it? And was there like an aha moment where you realized you had it?
Well, I'm one of the lucky ones who my natural talent was voice. And when I work with other writers, you know, we can develop so many elements of craft. And so voice came so naturally for me because it's just, I use humor as a defense mechanism as a kid, you know, while I'm getting pummeled by the bullies at school, I'm trying to crack a joke so that I don't cry. I mean, like, that's just, you know, when I feel like anybody who was bullied as a kid is like just positioned so well to be a writer because you develop this empathy for others. And when you mix in a little bit of humor, then I think you just, you know, you start to hit on something really, really good. So voice came naturally to me. But what's interesting is that I didn't know how to plot. I didn't know how to do pacing. I didn't know anything about structure. And so I would write these scenes And they would be really, really good and really powerful scenes, but I couldn't string it all together into a complete story, especially a novel length story. So once I figured out what my deficits were, it was like, okay, I know I'm good at voice. I know I'm good at concept, at ideation. Like I can come up with ideas that have never been done before. But then like to learn the structure was the next key moment in my development. And that's literally like, I found a class. It was a week long class called the Breakout Novel Intensive, taught by Donald Moss and Lauren Oberweger. And I won a scholarship to go participate in that. And so for a whole week, they taught like everything about novel structure. And I left that class. I went and I wrote, I finished writing the story that I'd been working on, and I sent it out, and it sold in a preempt as my first novel. So it was like, you can be so hungry for craft. And that's one thing that I would encourage every writer to do, is just like figure out how to increase your hunger for craft. Because, a sports star, for example, is they're going to age out at like 35, unless you're, Tom Brady, I think he's like 40, 45 now. And we got him for one more season down here in Tampa, which is awesome. But, after that, I don't know what he's going to do with himself other than like sell, Bitcoin or something. but for us writers and artists, you get to keep increasing your author toolkit for your entire life. And that's the most exciting thing to me, is because I feel like when I'm 90 years old, I'm still going to get to learn new stuff about how to make better art and how to make better stories.
I like that. I want to get back to your illustrations in a second, but while we're talking about the writing side of it, I want to ask how you found your sort of happy place writing for a young audience, because that, I feel like that's something, was that like the place you started, or did you start writing for adults and realize, I actually like writing for children better?
Yeah, it never once crossed my mind to write for adults, just because they're weird. And it's really hard to be around most adults. Unless you're hanging out with other artists and creative types. I did finally discover that, you put me in a room filled with creative, curious people, and all of a sudden I feel at home again. But I think that's probably like, that's the key juxtaposition, like the key shift. At some point, we all start off curious. We all start off creative. We all start off artists. And then at some point, something pops our bubble. Something takes the jam out of our donut and we stop. And I don't know why we stop. So my core, the core of who I am, embraces that inner child and seeks to tell stories that tell kids that it's okay to spend the rest of your life being curious and creative and courageous and empathetic.
I love that. So you have your first middle grade out there too, Garbage Island. Because you're writing for two different ages there. I think you've written for younger than that, and then you wrote from middle grade. Was there much transition to when considering the different audience you were approaching?
Yeah, and I've been told before that my voice, my author voice, fits really, really well into middle grade. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, it was always I was always kind of aging myself down to write for picture books. But I didn't have the elements of craft that I needed to write for middle grade. So it was really now that I'm there, I'll still have an idea and think to myself, man, that'd be a pretty good picture book, and I'll write it out. But more often than not, most of the ideas that come along are for middle grade novels.
So would you say that writing that middle grade book came easier than writing the picture books that you'd been writing?
Oh gosh, easier. That's none of writing is easy. It's all an exploration of trial and error. And if you want to be a working creative, I think you kind of have to find your lane. You have to find your voice. And then there's this weird, unfortunate business side to all of it, where it's like, okay, and we've also got to figure out, where can I sell 5 more books over the next 10 years? So if I know where my opportunities are, I'm going to sort of write within those opportunities as well. I hope that doesn't sound like selling out, because it's not.
No, not at all. Like you said, if you want to be a working creative, there are things you have to do. So is there anything that you've learned from later books that you wish you had known earlier in the writing process?
Oh my goodness. Yes. Okay. So yeah, again, I was lucky, right? I will freely admit I was lucky. So when I sent out that, I sent out that postcard that had one image on it that the editors fell in love with. Well, I was not a trained illustrator. I didn't know how to do color. I didn't know how to draw backgrounds. I literally had none of the tools. And so I went to every friend I'd made along the way and begged them to teach me really, really quickly, how do you separate the background from the foreground? How do you, what is color theory? Like, how do I make sure that this, these illustrations pop off the page? Because they're not going to let me do it in black and white like I wanted to, So I look back at the earliest stuff I've done. And I'm like, ooh, yeah, I could have done better, mostly on the drawing. It's usually the drawings. Like, I could have drew that a little bit better. But again, that's development. And even some of my, most favoritist artists of today, I look back at their earliest stuff and I'm like, yeah, he was pretty crappy as a beginner as well. So, I don't feel bad about it, but I definitely want to redraw everything I've ever drawn.
And then, since you bring both sides, the writing and the illustrating, do you always illustrate your own stories? And then I have a follow-up to that, but let's start with that.
So far I have, yes. So far I've illustrated all of the books that I have written. But I don't have to. I don't feel like I have to. Although, again, like we talked about at the beginning, when my craft as a writer isn't high at a high enough level, it's often the art that kind of brings it, that brings it up. So it may be that the publishers will only ever be interested in the stuff that I both write and illustrate.
And then the follow-up to that, do you illustrate other people's stories?
Yeah, and that, those have honestly become some of my favorite pieces of creation that I've gotten to work on, because typically the way it works is an editor envisions you as the illustrator for a manuscript that they've acquired, and then they send you that manuscript and they're like, hey, would you be interested in illustrating this? And the only way I will say yes is if it is a concept that like knocks my socks off, or let me put that differently, it's something that I never would have thought of on my own. And by having that bar set so high for books that I will illustrate, it basically, like, it just means that when I'm working on somebody else's book, it is a genuine marriage of their work and mine, because I'm always looking for ways, like, how can my artwork take their story to a completely new level? And so that has really been one of my calling cards as an illustrator, is give me the weird books. Give me the ones that you read that manuscript and you're like, how on earth would you ever illustrate this? I want that challenge, because I'm going to bring what makes me weird, my visual voice. I'm going to bring that to this story, and we're going to elevate it beyond what either of us could have done on our own.
So, and you kind of already answered this a little bit, but how do you know when a project is right for your illustration? Is there like a moment where it clicks and you're like, oh, this is definitely a project for me?
Yeah, typically it's one where the words go sideways to the pictures. And I don't know how else to explain that. But I love the stories where it's kind of told tongue in cheek. And one book I illustrated is called This Book Is Not About Dragons. Well, the whole book is about dragons, but the narrator is this little mouse. And they didn't tell me it was going to be a mouse. I just decided the narrator is going to be a mouse. And on every single page, he's telling you there's no dragons on that page. Well, then I hide 100 dragons in the background on every page so that the viewer, these little kids who are reading it, they're like, no, there's dragons everywhere. And that just creates a joy, right? That creates curiosity. It creates, rereadability. They'll want to read it again because they see, they want to find the dragons all over again. So that's the kind of story that I'm looking to illustrate, is something that really leaves room for me. They call it illustrator bait. Room for the illustrator to have fun, to add to the story.
And then have you ever gotten offers for books that you've read and then thought, I don't think I'm right for this?
Yes, for sure. And you know, it's just a gut reaction. And I can remember reading a manuscript, and the ones I remember most are the ones that I did end up illustrating. And there was one called Flashlight Night by Matt Forrest Essenwine, and I read that manuscript, and it was so poetic and it was so moody, and just as soon as I read it, it made me remember what it was to be a kid running around with a flashlight in my backyard and in the woods near my house. And I was like, I can't unread it. Therefore, my only reaction is, yes, I don't care. I don't care if they don't pay me. I need to illustrate this book. And I'm glad they did pay me, but I would have probably done it for free.
So stepping away from the craft for, but I want to rewind to the beginning of your creative journey. Whenever you first started out writing, what was it that you were trying to accomplish when you first started? Was it just a means of expression? What were you hoping to do with your writing?
Wow, that's a great question and a deep one, and probably goes all the way back, you know, all the way back to middle school, where I wanted to punish my enemies through fiction. I don't know. I was a bookworm as a kid. I loved to read. And what I loved most about it was the fact that for the moments that I was in those pages, I was in a world that was not my, normal. It was not the world that I was stuck in. It was a world that I was free within. And for me, it was always adventure stories. And I loved the magical realism and fantasy and all that sort of stuff as well. But there was just, I don't know, there's this feeling of going home when I get into an excellent story. And I loved it so much that I wanted to participate in the creation of those stories, as well as punish my enemies. Yeah.
The next question I usually ask is, has your objective changed over the years? And I wonder, are you still punishing your enemies when you write, or is there another sort of impetus there that keeps you writing? Like you mentioned, like, giving, you know, these weird stories out there, but how has your objective changed over the years?
Oh yeah. So I had a bad business deal with a gentleman who I named a rat after in one of my most recent stories and then killed it off. So, you know, he'll never know. He'll never get that. But in my heart, I felt happy about doing that. Yeah, so that's about the extent of my enemies. But has the objective changed? You know, it changed with my kids because I have kids. They're now 12 and 14, and I see them learning to navigate the world the same way that I had to. And I'm a way different dad to my kids than my dad was to me. My dad was super quiet. He was not expressive unless we were in trouble, in which case he was extremely expressive. But he also created opportunities for us in different ways. He was a good man, but not the most emotionally expressive. And so, you know, with my kids, I wanted them to be able to, I don't know, have opportunities for connection that I don't maybe didn't get as much of. And so I put a lot of that into the writing. And also, it's really fun to prove to them that if you set your mind to something and you're disciplined and you work hard, that you can succeed at, you know, whatever you put your mind to. Because I'll tell this story all the time. My dad swept floors at at Walmart. That was his job. And you know, my mom was a nurse. And literally, I have no business having been successful in the publishing industry because I grew up in a little redneck, you know, little redneck town where there were no connections to anything. And so the fact that I, you know, figured out a way into the industry and busted my butt and got somewhere in life because of it, I mean, that's like, I don't know. I love that story, because what it means for all of the listeners out there is that if I can do it, you can do it too. And it does take a lot of time, and you do have to have a fire lit inside you that you can't let go out. But it is available to anyone who's willing to put in the work to elevate their craft and elevate their network.
And then I want to ask about your journey with agents as well, because obviously getting an agent is such a big part of connecting with the publishing industry. So where were you as a writer when you first got an agent? Let's start with that. Where were you when you first got your agent?
Okay. Yep. So ladies and gentlemen, I am so sorry to say this. I had already sold my first 2-book deal before I got an agent. I told that story about standing on the ladder, you know, having sent out postcards. As an illustrator, you can send postcards out directly to the art directors. If they like your postcard, they pin it to their wall. The editors walk past and they say, "Ooh, that's neat." And then they call you. So that is a pathway for artists. And so I'd gotten my first 2-book deal that way. But this is a good story still. So I knew that I wanted an agent moving forward to manage my future deals for me. And I was going to one of the same conferences that I've been going to for the previous 10 years. And I saw which agents were coming to our next conference. So I sent an email ahead of the conference to one of them. And I was like, "Hey, I see you guys are going to be in Orlando at our conference. And I would love the opportunity to chat with you if you think it's appropriate. Here's what I've accomplished so far. Here, I have ideas for even more stories. Do you think we could meet?" And so they wrote back within a couple of days and they were like, "Well, send us 3 more things that you're working on." So I sent them 3 more things and then they wrote back and they're like, "Yep, let's meet." And so this is the part where it gets fun, because we talked about how you have to elevate your weird, right? You have to, like, when you bring your weird to a really high level, you become memorable. And the worst thing you want to be is forgettable in this industry. So it had been a long day of conferencing. I was exhausted. I had met some friends in the jacuzzi tub outside the hotel. And my meeting with these agents was, you know, like, let's just say it was at 6 p.m. And so I realized at like 5:55 that I'm still in the hot tub with my friends, and I get out and I'm dripping wet. I have on a bathing suit, a tank top, and a cowboy hat, and I walk barefoot down to the pool where I'm supposed to meet this agent and husband and wife team. And they look me up and they look me down and they're like, "You are an odd duck." And I was like, "Yes, I am." And then they were like, "That's good. We like odd in our company. We should get some French fries." And then we ate French fries off of the same plate and decided to do business together. I mean, that's literally how it happened.
I think the cowboy hat's really the icing on the cake for that story. Like, it's all there. No, that's fantastic. And I mean, obviously, I always feel silly asking this question, but did you feel something change in you when you got an agent? Did you feel like, okay, like, now there's this whole world of possibility? Or because you were kind of already doing it.
Yes. Yes, there is a change. And, you know, picture book people, for the picture book writers out there and the illustrators, you don't really have to have an agent to work in picture books. You do pretty much need one for middle grade, unless you've, you know, already got a bunch of connections with the editors. But there's something to having an agent and just being able to bounce ideas off of them and to know that you're working on projects that are pushing you in the right direction. Because I really feel like that's when you don't have representation, and that representation is financially tied to your success, they're going to give you the advice that they think that you need that's going to make both of you successful. So, you know, it's career counseling, really what it is, at a different level that you can't get from a critique group, because in that critique group, nobody else is tied to your success. But that agent, you know, they might represent 100 other authors, but they know that they need to make as many of those authors successful as possible, so that everybody gets paid. And you know, while it is wonderful to work in the creative industries, like, making sure that you can, you know, survive in the creative industries is a top priority.
So I want to ask about, because we've talked about ideas a lot, but, you know, one of the things that you advertise, you're a real life adventurer. Like, you're going scuba diving, you're going adventuring. Yeah. And I imagine that inspires your ideas, right? Is that where your inspiration comes from? Or talk a little about where you get your ideas from.
Yeah. So I've got a lot of ideation tools, but my personal favorite one is to see something out in the world that I've never done before that I would like to know more about and then go and have a really dumb adventure doing exactly that thing, learning how to do it. Because in that learning process, you're going to make all the mistakes that your character needs to make in the story. And so like a perfect example of this is I love this. So I am fascinated by the concept of buried treasure. I've always wanted to be a treasure hunter. I pretty much like grew up on the beaches of Florida thinking to myself, there's gotta be gold here somewhere, pirate gold, you know, whatever. And so at some point it hit me, it was like, well, it's not that expensive to learn how to, you know, metal detect on the beaches of Florida. And it's a, you know, 45-minute drive from where you live. So I went out and I bought the cheapest little crummy metal detector that I could get my hands on. I, you know, got it off of Craigslist and went out and I started walking up and down the beaches and like bloop, 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 bloop. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I found a quarter and I found this and I found that. And I just let that kind of feed my fascination. And then I started to learn more and I discovered, oh, you know what? There were treasure ships in the 1700s that sank off the coast of off the east coast of Florida, and literally like Spanish reals, silver reals wash up on the beaches. And if you go to these beaches, you can find, you know, so I just let it grow. And little by little, I did more and more research. And then when I went and sat down to write a story about a kid who's searching for a lost diamond ring on the Florida East Coast beaches, I had all of the tools and I had all of the emotions. Really, that was the most important thing, was I had the emotions of what it feels like to have your batteries die out when you're 2 miles away from, you know, from where you parked, or the elation of discovering something that, you know, something like a gold earring. Who cares that it's only worth $5? It's like, I found gold, you know, it's like, it's so cool and so much fun. And so I loved that process. That's what works for me. And it makes sure that I get to have, you know, a bunch of dumb adventures before I die.
We have a shared interest. I'm convinced that I'm going to find Captain Kidd's buried treasure on Long Island. I'm convinced it's going to be me. But I have to ask, like, is that how all of your stories start? Has there ever been a story that you've started without having previously done something to spark that story?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, yes. So I wrote, I've got one on Kindle Vella right now, which is Vella is a episodic publishing platform. So you serialize your fiction, you publish it one episode at a time. And, you know, it started with that dumb pizza rat video from, you know, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago. Like there was this, you know, viral video of a rat dragging a slice of pizza down the subway platform. And I literally started the story right there with a rat dragging a piece of pizza down the subway platform. And you let it go a little ways and you write a chapter, you know, so you see something that's curious, something that doesn't fit. I call it a juxtaposition. So it's two things that don't belong together. A rat carrying a slice of pizza on the subway, like that typically isn't something you think you'd see. So I started there and I just let it go for a chapter. And at the end of the chapter, I was like, yep, this is a thing. And then I wrote it to two chapters. And, you know, typically within, you know, 3, 4, 5 chapters, you'll know if it's a thing or not. But I always love to start with an interesting and unexpected juxtaposition. So that's another one of my favorite tools that I use is juxtaposition.
I want to shift gears a bit and make sure we talk about another venture that you're involved in, which is this organization called Ready Chapter One. So I just want to hand it off to you and tell us what that is, what it all means, who can get involved.
Yeah. So it's what happened to my in-person writers group when a pandemic came along. And literally everybody was like, you can't meet anymore. So, you know, I had all these writers who were basically just trying to break in. They're trying to make something of themselves. They're trying to find their way in the publishing industry. And we were starting to meet. We were, you know, reading pages to each other. We were having a really successful writing opportunities for these folks. And then all of a sudden it's like, but now you can't. And we didn't know how long that was going to go on. So I was like, okay, there's got to be a way to do this online. There's got to be a way to use these same platforms that I have to use for these boring meetings for my day job, and build something that's going to build community for writers. So I interviewed a ton. I interviewed all my writing friends, and I sent out this survey, and I was like, all right, what are the most frustrating things to you about the publishing industry? What would be most helpful for you? And literally, like, I got so much of the same response back, and it was, and it came down to these two pillars of craft and network. And everybody's like, if I can build my craft to a really high level, and I can build my network to a really high level, the only missing piece is a little bit of time and a little bit of luck, because publishers want to publish great, well-written books. And if we can train people how to do that, well, then, you know, then they're going to get their opportunity. So for Ready Chapter One, what I did was I kind of identified the top 10 elements of craft that you really need to know how to do well to be successful. And then I found the best teachers that I could find, from editors and agents to best-selling authors, to teach each one of those elements of craft in a consecutive series. So basically, like, we take somebody and we start with nothing. I've got the seed of an idea for a story, and we go through and we start with ideation. Okay, have you developed the idea enough to make sure it has legs for a whole novel? Move to character development, plotting, pacing, tension, dialogue. Just go through the entire gamut, so you can essentially run your story through this workshop series and end up with a pitch package that's ready to send out to publishers. That's the concept. That's the idea, and what we're where we're trying to go with it.
This is your first year with it, right? Is it going right now?
It's a brand new baby organization. This is our first year with it. Pardon me. We're hopefully pulling on investors. That's the word. Some investors who will help us. Because right now I'm getting, like, my recordings are like Zoom recordings, you know, and those are great. But they're not the quality that I would love to have. So my goal is to pull in some investors who will help me do this at just a nicer scale, so that we're doing high quality recordings that kind of look and feel like masterclass. And then we can help people break the rejection cycle. And that's the goal. Because what happens is, folks, they get in this cycle where they're writing in a vacuum, and then they're the only people who read their stuff is their family and friends. And so of course their family and friends are going to say it's great. And then when they do submit out to, you know, these industry gatekeepers, they have no network. They've never met them before. They have no idea who they are. So they just don't hear back. And then they either, like, start over in that same exact cycle, or they give up. And that's where most people, like, that's where most people lose their opportunity in writing, is by, you know, getting into a rejection cycle. And so my concept for a success cycle is just the opposite of that. It's, you know, you write among friends, you write with people who are on the same journey that you're on. you get feedback from, you know, you get feedback from professionals, and you get feedback from your peers, and you network like crazy, so that when you do send your stuff out on submission, these folks know who you are. They've met you before. They remember, you know, you were memorable because of either your pitch or, you know, the way you presented it. And I feel like if we can do that well, and that's my challenge as a sort of network or a program organizer, if we can do that well, people are going to, you know, they're going to find success in publishing.
And what kind of writer does this program apply to? Is it genre specific? Is it age specific? Or is it sort of whoever wants to?
Yeah, we say that, you know, story transcends genre. And so, like, the elements of craft that we're teaching, I don't know that it would necessarily apply to picture book writers, because, you know, a picture book is a different beast all its own. But anything from middle grade novel all the way to adult novel in all genres. And we've got folks who are taking these tools and just, you know, they're coming up with stuff that I never even imagined using these tools that we created. So we've got the video classes, and then there's the PDF handouts that kind of help you work through what was taught in the class. So is this a good time to say that I wanted to give the one class to everybody? Okay, cool. So yeah, anybody who wants to go on to our website at readychapter1.com, and that's the numeral one, not spelled out, and use the code Gotham. So I just all caps Gotham, You can have my class. The one class that I'm best at teaching is ideation. So it's called Story Ideas That Sell. And it's, I think it's about a 2-hour class, and it comes with like 5 or 6 really solid handouts that will help you create and craft an idea for your story that kind of, that will help it stand out from the crowd and make waves with those industry gatekeepers. So I wanted to give that for free to anybody who's listening today and even on the recording. And if it expires, because I think I did set an expiration date on the coupon code, but if it expires, just email me. I'll get you in. It's all good.
Thank you, Brett. And to all of our listeners, we will include that in the show notes. So if you didn't get it down, we will include it in the show notes. Just look below the recording and you'll see the link there. Okay, so Fred, you sound like a very busy guy. I mean, we didn't even talk. Before the show, we were talking about you work in an animation studio too, is writing there. You're writing books. You've got Ready Chapter One. How do you balance your time to make sure that you're hitting all of the things that you want to get to?
Yeah, efficiencies for sure. I have to create efficiencies within everything, you know, within how we cook, within how I drive the kids to school, you know, within what we choose to do on vacations. I mean, you have to commit. And because I've been an entrepreneur pretty much, you know, for the last 15 years, I'm used to working 60-hour weeks. It's just what you do. And so the downtime is, is more like 7 p.m. on and then Sundays. And that's okay. And I'm really good with that. And I make sure and eat healthy, and I make sure and exercise and make sure I'm spending time with my kids, because that's super important as well. But, you know, the fire is lit and it won't go out. So even if I had nothing to do, I would sit there and like, I would reach for a pencil so I could doodle on something, you know, because it's like, if you're a creative, you got to create.
And this might be a silly question, but I imagine since you're writing for an animation studio and since Ready Chapter One is so tied into the writing world already, I imagine you're getting creative satisfaction from doing those things as well too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so weird for me because this is my first foray on a narrative creation team, is I guess what I would call it. So I'm working with character designers. I'm working with animators. I'm working with, you know, production riggers and lighters. And so all of these kind of weird parts of the animation process that I was never familiar with before. I didn't even necessarily know how to write a script for animation. But then, you know, you go online and it's like, oh, they've posted, you know, into the Spider-Verse, the entire script. So you just kind of pick up the formatting from that. And OK, that's how you do it. But it's fascinating for me, and it's also terrifying. And that's a great thing though, because for the listeners, if something terrifies you, that probably means you should do it. Because the only way you're ever going to grow is by failure, and you can't fail if you're doing stuff that you're already good at. So I don't know how successful we're going to be with this little animation startup, but it's super fun. And I get to work with a whole team of misfit artists who, you know, they're just as nuts as I am. And yeah, we're going to make some weird stuff and see if we can sell it to Netflix, you know?
I love it. So I want to ask, because it sounds like this side of storytelling is much more collaborative. And I know for writers, you know, that most writers, at least, it's a solitary thing, and a lot of them prefer it that way. So how has the process been different collaborating with the whole team?
Oh man. Yeah. I realize what a bad person I am mostly. I mean, you never want to be that guy who's like, because I said so, but you know, I'm like, I've got interns and college kids and like people have just graduated and they want to redesign a character. They want to retitle the show, or they're like, you should write an episode about blah. And I'm like, no, because I said so. And so I'm having to learn how to better explain storytelling paradigms so that I can essentially have enough cred with my team that they don't hate me and they don't think I'm a jerk. Because when you're working on your own stuff, you're your own worst editor, you're your own worst critic. And I found that I am just as critical with other human beings, and that's probably not the best approach.
All right, so I want to get into some audience questions now, so make sure we have enough time for them. First question, will publishers accept a children's book without images?
Absolutely, yes. They are looking for fresh concepts, stuff that's never been done before, stuff that like just feels new and different. And then that publisher will acquire the manuscript from the author, basically do a licensing deal with the author. And then, and this is the hard part. This is the part that a lot of authors struggle with. As the author, you have to let it go, because that publisher is going to pick who they think will be the best illustrator for the project. Now, they might ask your opinion. And if they ask your opinion, say, you know, who would you like to illustrate this? Then you can say, I'd like Fred Kaler to illustrate it. Other than that, they're still going to make that final call. And they're looking for authors that they can kind of, or not authors, but projects that they can mold, because that editor wants to be part of that process as well. If you turn in something that's perfect and that editor can't add anything to it, they might feel less inclined than if you send something that's just kind of like a diamond in the rough. And they're like, okay, I can help you turn this into something even more brilliant. So be open to that editor's advice on how to make your story even more brilliant.
Next question. I'm querying agents now with a middle grade book. I also write picture books. Should I mention that in my query letter, or does that muddy the waters? I'm hoping I can find one agent who reps both picture book and middle grade.
Oh yeah, you'll be able to find an agent who reps both. That's not a big deal. That's very common in the industry, is for creatives to cross genre from picture book to chapter book to board book to middle grade. You know, I think if you were going to say I write both picture books and YA and like steamy YA, that might not be the right fit. But from picture books to middle grade is a really easy transition.
And if there are more questions, get those in. Until then, I've got a ton. So let's get back to some questions I have for you. The first one is, you know, you've mentioned rejection a bit, and I'm curious about your journey with rejection too, because I'm sure you faced some, even though, we've talked a lot about the successes. So were there any rejections that really hurt, and how did you get through them?
Oof. Yeah. So I'll have to send it to you. I've got a blog post about like 10 reasons to fall in love with rejection. And it is. So yes to lots of rejection. I probably had enough, rejection slips that weren't even personalized, just not right for our list, kind of checked this box, sent it back to you, that I could weave myself a blanket, to cry myself to sleep in. But while those rejections hurt, it means it's evidence that you're in the game, right? And so I don't even know necessarily what to compare it to, but we talk in my family about, we'll get a royalty check in, and for this last royalty period, this one book only made $100 in royalties, and that was bad, and that was sad because we were hoping that it did a whole lot better. And then we look at each other and we're like, but we're still in the game. And that's what's so important, because as long as you keep putting yourself out there, and if you're listening to that feedback that you do get, because sometimes it'll be a rejection slip, but sometimes it'll be, hey, I really liked your voice, but the concept just didn't seem like it had enough legs to carry the entire novel. Like, you take that feedback from the rejection and you turn it into a positive by actually employing that into your novel, like those rejections just get better and better and better. And there comes a point at which like the rejections are so good that you know you're on the cusp. And that's a really frustrating but cool place to be. So, and any writer on the cusp knows it when you're there, because it's like, everybody says how much they love it, and then I'm just missing one little stinking thing. And that also is part of your goal, is like figure out what that one little stinking thing is and let that become your next class that you take, or your next workshop that you go to, is on how to improve that missing piece. Because once you complete, like once you have a full author toolkit and you've got just all of those elements of craft dialed in, I can promise that it's not a matter of if, but when.
Another question here from the audience. I love your point of combining art and writing skills. Is this concept related to Scott Adams' idea of talent stacking, combining skills until you have the unique combination that makes you extraordinary?
Whoa. I don't know who Scott Adams is, but I would be friends with him because yes. And in fact, you know, I talk about that more in the entrepreneur scene than anywhere else because my background is as a graphic designer and a marketer and, you know, an advertising creative director. And so it's like when I layer all of that stuff and then you add writing on top of it and then you add illustration on top of that, like that's what creates, you know, that's what makes me invaluable to any company that I go to work with, because I can not only, you know, help them rebrand their whole company, but then I can also help them tell their story. I mean, you know, people pay thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for that kind of stuff. So I don't know the specific person who came up with that concept, but I live that concept for sure.
We have another question here. So hi, Fred, you're great. I'm an older viewer, retired, but still working on my writing, who as a writer since age 7 chose publishing over law school because I adored Maxwell Perkins. One of my 7 presses was a kid's press, and you are spot on. However, the others were university presses who, especially in one case with New Mexico, were trying to develop children's books. Did you ever consider looking at this area of the publishing world when researching where to apply?
Ooh, boy. Okay, so my first foray into publishing, when I knew that I wanted to get a book published, I knew that the publishers were in New York City, or at least that's where it was in my mind. So I literally Googled, like, where are the publishers in New York City? And like, and then I was like, can I go and meet publishers in New York City? And literally my first plane trip to New York, I mean, I was such a bumpkin. I had never you know, never really traveled to a city before, couldn't use the subway, didn't know how to do anything, was terrified. I stayed in a youth hostel, you know, that was $30 a night in Manhattan, and had to sleep with my backpack on. And, but it was just because I didn't know the way. And so figuring it out for myself, the only industry that I ever really learned was the traditional publishing industry, because that's all that I knew existed. And we've come so far, though. I mean, there's so much other opportunity today to get your work out into the world. And I think it's all valid and it's all worthy of exploration. It just, you know, you've got to partner with the folks who can help you best tell your story and get it out there.
And then I want to get 2 last questions in before I let you go. The first one, you know, you've given us so much good advice so far, but if I were to say, you know, one piece of advice, if you could boil it all down to tell our viewers, what would that one piece of advice be?
Okay. One piece of advice. Can I think about that one while you ask the other question?
Of course. Yeah. The other one is just promote whatever it is you have to promote. Where can people find your stuff? Where can they find you? Social media, website, what books you want to promote, any of that good stuff.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's see here. My website is www.ilikefred.com. That's where all my book stuff is. And it's probably mostly up to date. And then all of the, you know, writing workshops and things are at readychapter1.com. And that's the numeral 1. And I'm on social media. I am sad that my best platform is Facebook. I wish it was Instagram, but I'm just like, I'm not a cell phone power user. So Facebook is a lot better for me. And it's at Super Fred with 2 D's. So you can find me at Super Fred on Facebook and Twitter, Super Fred with 2 D's. And that literally harkens back to my high school email address, superfred@hotmail.com. And now I have to give you advice, words of wisdom. I've got a bunch of cheesy stuff, but for me, it's most important for folks to figure out what fuels that fire inside you and to keep it going. And if you're writing to become famous, if you're writing to get rich, I think you're going to end up disappointed. If you're writing because there are stories inside you that just have to come out, if you're writing because there's a kid somewhere in the world who needs to see himself reflected on the page, then you're in it for the right reasons. And the most important things that I own, and I don't like owning things, but the most important things in my house are the letters that I get from kids who said that this book made them fall in love with reading, or this book helped them see themselves in a different light. And so, you know, understand your why. I guess that would be the advice. And maybe that's cheesy as well, but you know, dig deep and understand why you're doing this, and do it to make the world a better place. Cause that's, you know, we need each other right now. We live in a crazy world.
That's true. And it's not cheesy. It's good. So you, that's the good advice. So Fred, thank you so much for being here today. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. My pleasure.
And to all of our listeners, like I said, all the links that he mentioned will be included in the show notes. Thank you all for being here. We'll be back next week. We're back on Wednesday next week. So we'll see you Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern time. And until then, thanks for being here. And thank you, Fred.